Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. We are injury attorneys, but we're ready to answer your questions on any legal subject. All you have to do is give us a call at 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. And even though we're injury attorneys, we're going to cover your question, answer your question, help you solve your problems. 303-713-8255. Today at 10 o'clock, every Saturday at 10 o'clock on KOA, 850 a.m., every Saturday we have our one-hour Champions of the People injury show. Today we're talking about injuries and the effect on the family. How do injuries affect the family? What do you do about it? How do you do it? How do you recover for this? How do you put your life back together again once you've been injured? When the insurance company won't believe you about depression, what do you do? When the insurance company won't believe you about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, what do you do? How do you recognize it? You know, usually, Brad and I have discovered that family members notice symptoms in the injured victims quicker, easier than the injured victim does in herself. So, today at 10 o'clock, every day, every Saturday at 10 o'clock, and all of our shows are, and podcasts are put onto our website, championsofthepeople.com. As well as all of our books are there. You can download an e-copy of any of our books at any time, free. If you want a hard copy of any of our books, free, all you have to do is call our law firm and we'll be glad to send you one. So, today, injuries and how they affect the family. And if you don't have an attorney that understands how they affect families, you need one. Get one. Have a strategy. The insurance companies have strategies, time and time again. Okay, today we're going to talk a little bit about the RICO Act and marijuana. It's not only kind of interesting, it's absolutely fascinating. I have a recent case out of Rye, Colorado, southern Colorado. People owned 100 acres of ranch land. There was a marijuana industry or facility put up, quote, next door to them. And they eventually didn't like the smell. They eventually didn't like the activity and the noise coming from and emanating from the situation, from their neighbors. And so they filed a lawsuit, and it was a RICO lawsuit. RICO stands for Racketeer, Influenced, and Corrupt Organizations Act. So, Brad, let's talk a little bit about that, because that's a federal law. RICO Act, for the first time by the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, was applied to a private cause of action on marijuana operations.
It's funny what can come out of the legal world and out of the way society reacts to things. The United States District Court, actually Court of Appeals, determined that having a marijuana grow operation, a marijuana operation, was in fact a racketeering activity. Now you stop and think about that. That's amazing. They say it's a racketeering activity that is subject to the RICO Act, and it exists, and we allow it to exist, and it exists. Now, I'm not saying if I am or not against whether or not marijuana grow industries and marijuana operations should go on, because that's not my decision. That's a decision of somebody else. But what I can do is say that it's amazing that you can have the federal government sit there and look at different operations going on in a state and say, those are racketeering activities, but yet go ahead and operate, and now you have to go to the next step and prove that that racketeering activity is causing damage to your business or your property if you want to do something about it happening next door to you or down the street from you or in your same community. To me, it's just a fascinating twist of the law that we all look at. And it gives credit, and I can give you a lot of credence and credibility to our state's rights versus federal rights and what we built into our Constitution.
Right. Well, the Rileys are the ones that sued. They sued 6480 Pinckney, a company, an LLC, limited liability company, for offensive, you know, odors, smells, for devaluing their 100 acres of ranch land. And so one of the claims was under the Racketeering Act, the RICO Act, Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act. Think about that a minute. This is fascinating law. You have a RICO statute that says it was originally passed years ago in 1970, basically to go after organized criminal activity. And the original idea and inception of it was, we can prosecute person A for murder, but we want his boss, who ordered him to commit the murder, and it was harder, not impossible, but harder to get the boss and hold him liable for criminal charges under murder until the RICO Act came along. Then it was easier to do, but it was originally designed for that. But it fits. If you violate the elements fit. If you violate a federal crime, that's one of the elements of RICO. If you violate a federal statute, right? So marijuana is still illegal under federal law. So there's the violation. Does it affect your business or your property? That's the main gravamen, the cause of action under the RICO Act. So it doesn't apply to personal injuries. There's one case that said it does not, but it applies to injury to your business and or to property, right? And so they sued because their ranch land was devalued. And the interesting part about this case, and we'll get to it during the show, the interesting part about this case is that the original trial court dismissed it, said RICO doesn't apply. The Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed it and said, yes, RICO does apply, and the Rileys can bring this action, a private cause of action, under the RICO Act. And then they went to trial just this summer, and we'll tell you later in the show what happened. Right now we're going to talk to Derek at Colorado Springs. Good morning, Derek.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's well, cooking, what's man?
Nothing. I listen to you guys. I drive to work, and I usually start my shifts on the weekends. I listen to you guys, and I just figured I'd call in today. Got a couple questions.
Great. We're ready.
Hey, about a month ago, I was doing Christmas shop, and I was driving through the parking lot of Walmart, and I was stopped, and I was waiting for a car in front of me to pull out. They had their reverse lights on, so I stopped, and they were going to pull out, and I was going to take their spot. And while I'm sitting there waiting, a lady just backed out right into the side of my car, and it was as if she wasn't looking behind her. She just pressed the gas pedal and rear-ended, backed out right into the side of my car.
Right.
Damage on my car is right in the middle portion of my car, right about the passenger and passenger side, front and rear door. And it's been about a month, and now the insurance that the lady has held has told me that because it's on private property, they're disputing the claim or not accepting liability for the claim. I've submitted pictures to them. I've pretty much complied with every request that they've asked for, and I'm just wondering if this is something I'm going to have to pursue a civil legal battle with.
Okay, so great question, Dirk. That's absolutely fascinating law, because so now you are in the parking lot, right?
Yeah, so it's private property.
Private property, parking lot. You're waiting for somebody to back out. You're going to pull in, and she just backs out into what's kind of a slanted angle parking spot, basically?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, yeah, right. And so then were you injured, or were we talking just about property damage?
Just property damage.
Okay. This is a fascinating answer. We got a break coming up here, so can you stick with us and hang with us the other side of the break?
Sure can.
Derek, great. Thank you. Put you on hold. We'll be right back with you. You're going to love the answer. So, all right, you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. You can call us. We're injury attorneys, but we'll answer your question on any legal subject. You know that. 303-713-8255. There's not another show like this one. We're ready to do it. We've done it for years. We're glad to do it. 303-713-8255. Today at 10 o'clock on 850 KOA, our Champions of the People Injury Show, a one-hour show. We get down to the nitty-gritty, we get down to the details, and today we discuss in detail, once you have an injured victim in a family, what is the effect on the family, how do you deal with this, how do you recover for this, and how do you put the family structure back together again? Bell and Pollock, we'll be right back. Welcome back. Fasten your seatbelt. Here we go. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. 303-713-8255. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our information is there. On the homepage, you can choose from one of two buttons, right? When you're going to talk to the insurance adjuster for the very first time. You can listen to our show. You can hit one button and listen to our show. It's 30 minutes long on what you need to know and what you can ask. Or if you don't have time for that, you can hit the other button and you get a quick PDF printable, downloadable checklist on what you need to know and what you can ask. That's very, very important. Right before the break, we were talking to Derek. Derek, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Derek had an accident in a private parking lot. It was going down an aisle where they have the slanted parking spaces. He was waiting for somebody to pull out so he could pull into the parking spot, their parking spot. While he was waiting, some person just backed right out, hit him on the side of his car. Now the insurance company is giving him a runaround for about a month. Is that fair, Derek?
Yeah, that sounds
fair. Okay, Brad, what do you got?
Yeah, Derek, you know, obviously you want to get the insurance companies involved, but, you know, the interesting thing about parking lots is because they're on private property, the basic rules of the road and the laws that you have for operating a motor vehicle and what you're supposed to do in the event of an accident don't necessarily apply in a parking lot. As a matter of fact, rarely will the police come out on a minor parking lot crash or a situation where just the vehicles are damaged. They don't even come out. They can't really give the tickets, or there's no laws that apply. There are rules of the road as far as who has the right of way on a feeder lane versus a main thoroughfare versus coming out of a parking lot, so or parking space. So what has to happen on that situation when you determine a fault? It's a whole different set of circumstances in a lot of ways for the insurance companies, because no ticket is going to normally be given in the parking lot for operating a vehicle inappropriately. And insurance companies like to look and say, who got the ticket? Now, they'll say that until you're suing them, and then they'll say it can't be brought up in a court of law, and that's true. But they always look at the ticket to begin with when they're doing it on the side. As to your situation, the insurance company should be covering the damage to your vehicle and the other party's insurance company. The point of it is proving that their driver was responsible for causing the crash. From the description you give me, you're sitting there, you're there, and she just comes running into you. That's her careless operation of her car. It doesn't sound like she has much of an excuse, or this person that hit you has much of an excuse. So now it's going to come down to being able to prove what happened. Have you been able to get from the other party's insurance company what it is or what they're saying happened in this crash?
No, they just say that they're waiting to review and accept liability, and it's been probably about 3 weeks, and I've called, left messages. They call, you know, they play the phone tag game, but I called my insurance company just as, you know, it's not a whole lot of damage, but it's a scuff on the side of my car. And I called them to say, to ask them, hey, what should I do here? And they're like, honestly, this is just, it's a waiting game. And if it's something you want to get fixed, the best thing to do is try taking a civil claim to her and getting it processed in the county for a civil claim.
I'll tell you what, Derek, we've done it before. We've been successful. So the general traffic laws and the rules on while you're traveling on the street generally don't apply. However, you know, let's get this clear. Let's crystallize it, because when you're in a parking lot, when they have a stop sign there and they have a, you know, pedestrian crossing, those rules work. They apply. And so the general statutes on operating your cars on the street do not apply. But she backed into you. That's the most basic form of carelessness and negligence there is. And so you're right. They're just delaying you and hope you just go away. You can, you can have a claim here. We'll be glad to help you, because all they're doing is delaying you. What you want is your property damage. They should pay for the property damage. And when they say, well, it's a parking lot, we don't really know, there's no rules, that's ridiculous. Sure. I mean, you mean you can't have an injury on a private property? Yes, you can. Of course you can. Can you have violation of rules? Yes. And backing up is one of the basic rules.
Derek, have you had the damage estimated as far as what it's going to cost to repair it?
I have. It's my work beater car, and it's about $2,100 worth of damage.
Wow.
And it's right on the rear quarter panel. It's kind of on that whole driver or passenger side rear kind of area. And so the whole door skin to be replaced.
Okay, so you have a written estimate, right?
I don't have a written estimate. I've just taken it to a couple of body shops and asked them, ballparking it. But what that was going to be my next step is get a written estimate, go down to the civil or go down to the county court here in El Paso County and file a civil claim against her, the policyholder, and say, hey, look, I mean, if this is what I have to do, this is what I have to do to get my car fixed.
Let's do one step in between. How long ago did this crash happen?
About a month ago. It actually happened, I believe it was, it had been November 21st. So it was November 21st.
Okay.
The actual date of it.
Let's go this. I want you to get good photos and good proof of the damage to your car, because that's going to be important. Then I think let's do this. Go get a written estimate, and then call our firm. You have a pen handy?
I do, yeah.
303-795-5900.
Okay.
Call and ask to speak to either Gary or Brad. We're there most of the time.
Gary or Brad, and
remind it, say it's from the radio show on the parking lot accident. And when you get that estimate, we'll get a copy of the estimate. We'll send a formal demand for you to the driver of the other vehicle and to that person's insurance company.
Okay, good deal. Well, hey guys, I appreciate that, and you'll definitely hear from me. And the website's championsofthelaw.com too. I can go on there and get the information.
Okay, so, Derek. One more thing though, and Brad was about right. I agree with him. Before you file suit, let's make a demand. But it's important, and I do this all the time. You know, you make demand and you say, okay, if you don't, you give them a deadline. Well, and we'll help you do this in our demand letter. You give them a deadline. You got to pay by this point in time. They don't comply with the deadline. You give them one more letter, and then you can attach the copy of the small claims action you're going to file so they can see it. And you say, here's your deadline. If you don't respond and pay by this second deadline, we're going to file this. But you have to mean it, okay? And when we mean it, usually you don't even have to go to court, because usually they pay. Sometimes they don't. So okay. I'm going to put you on hold, Derek, and if you give your information to Kevin as well, we'll have your phone number, and then you call us when you get the estimate, and we'll write the letter for you.
All right. Hey, sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll take care of you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Give Kevin your information. We're here for you. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, our website, championsofthepeople.com. Information is what you need. Information is empowering. Today at 10 o'clock, every Saturday at 10 o'clock, our Champions of the People Injury Show. Today's subject, once you're injured, what's the effect on you, the injured victim, and the family? What if a breadwinner is injured? What's the effect on the family? Monetary, emotional, psychological, mental, anxiety, grief, depression, stress? Can you recover for those things? Of course. Do the insurance companies want to pay for them? No. What do they say? Well, it's invisible. Those are invisible injuries. We're not going to pay for them. They're no big deal. It's a big deal. PTSD is a big deal. Okay, we were talking earlier in the show about the Racketeer Influence, Corrupt Organizations Act, the RICO Act, and so there was a lawsuit brought by the Rileys in Southern Colorado. They're out of Rye, Colorado, in Pueblo County, I believe, and so it went to trial. They alleged their neighbors had a marijuana facility, had bad odor, loud noises, devalued the value of their land. They filed the lawsuit. It originally was dismissed. Then it went to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, and there's the important point. The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals said the RICO Act applies. Remanded it to the district court. So there's law right there created by the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Says the RICO Act of law applies to a marijuana. Why? Because marijuana is in violation of federal law, and the statute, the RICO statute, extends a private cause of action. So, Brad, so how does that open up the door? How does that affect all marijuana operations? What's the open question?
Well, that's it. You know, you see some articles and stuff where the marijuana industry acts like that was a win. And they did great, or it's a win for the marijuana industry. And I question that. And you have to be concerned. And that's why you have to look at every case, and you have to look at it, what law is being decided within the case versus the case itself. There's no doubt the Rileys lost the case. And in my opinion, when I look at it, it was kind of an interesting fight, because when it went up to the Court of Appeals, at first it was dismissed as not being a racketeering activity. It went up to the Court of Appeals, and an appellate court, a federal district appellate court, determined that the marijuana operations were, in fact, a racketeering activity. Now, that decision stands, and it has precedential value. Now, you know, obviously it didn't go to the Supreme Court to be decided, but it does have precedential value, and under federal law, then they've decided that a marijuana operation, marijuana grow, marijuana operations are racketeering activities. Now, so the next, and that was decided. I think that's a loss for the marijuana industry. And I think that's something the marijuana industry has to recognize, and people have to recognize. Now, the next question, though, that the appellate court said is now the Rileys have to prove that they're having a civil loss, that they're being damaged as a result of that particular operation or activity. And otherwise, that racketeering activity exists. As we all know, the feds have decided they're not going to do anything about the operations that exist in Colorado as long as it comes within state law. 6480 was coming within state law. And so the Rileys were unable to identify or show any kind of property to their own business or any kind of damage, I mean, to their business or property.
And we'll tell you why after the break. It's absolutely fascinating. And then this whole concept, and it's right here in the Riley case, right here. How do you lose the case and win it, and how do you win it and then lose it? All at the same time, all in the same decision. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are there. You can download an e-copy of our book for free. If you want a hard copy of any of our books, you can call the studio right here at 303-713-8255. We're ready to answer your questions. We'll be right back. Legal Rock and Roll. Here we go. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. Our law firm is Bell and Pollack. We formed our law firm in 1984 with a vision and mission to help injured victims, and it's been consistent and successful since then till right now. You can call us anytime if you've been injured. And don't forget about our 10 o'clock show every Saturday on KOA. Grab your legal bagel. Grab your legal coffee. We're talking to Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Good. What's cooking?
Hey, we're going with that pork chorizo omelet for the breakfast special. We're going to run that for the rest of the week. That's a two-egg omelet with that pork chorizo, fresh baby spinach, diced tomatoes and onions. Of course, you can get that scratch-made red or green chili right off the top with some mixed cheese and a side of hash browns. That's going to be the breakfast special all week. And then our lunch special is going to be a steak and cheddar sandwich. We're going to take a hoagie roll. We're going to load that up with some really cheesy sauce on there, grilled steak, peppers and onions sautéed on that. Of course, you can get our homemade potato chips or our waffle cut fries on the side of that. That's going to be the lunch special all week, guys. And we are still going strong right through the end of the year with the every Monday and Friday all-you-can-eat taco or burrito buffet. That is every Monday and every Friday from 11 to 2. It is all-you-can-eat, and it does include a non-alcoholic beverage in the price of that buffet. Those are scratch-made products on there. Tons of other things on the menu to check out as well. Plenty of sports on the flat screens for today. We got the Bronco game coming up today, so you can come in and gear up and get ready for that. Get a good meal and get on with the rest of your day. Get ready for the game. Tons of things to check out at Caitlin's Restaurant today and all this weekend, guys.
Eric.
Yes.
You have some construction going on out there?
We have a little bit. Actually, you know, yesterday they're doing a big resurface of everything. The parking lot, the sidewalk, the face of the building. They're going to upgrade everything, put us some LED lighting. It's going to be really, really nice when they get done. But it is a little inconvenient right now, so the parking is a little scrimped. They did move the stuff out of the way of the front of our space yesterday, thankfully, so we do have our upfront parking available. There are a few spaces taken up with some of the equipment, but it's moving pretty quick, and it'll be well worth the wait when you guys come and check it out. So be sure you see that stuff when it's all done as well. But we are open. We are ready to go.
So it's easy access, no problem.
Absolutely, yeah. There's nothing blocking. You can come in either direction off of Mississippi, or you can come from behind off of Kentucky over there off of Cherry. So there's easy way in, easy way out. Good breakfast, good things to do, good prices, all that good stuff.
Business as usual.
Business as usual, absolutely.
Okay, buddy.
Hey, Eric, I was over there a couple of weeks ago, and I love your extra hot green chili. And I was eating it, and my family was looking at me and said, "What's the matter?" Because I'm getting tears in my eyes. And they said, "Are you okay?" "Yes, I'm okay. I just love this green chili." So, man, thanks a lot.
Absolutely.
Where are you located?
That is pork-free chili. We do make that on here on premise, and we do sell it in bulk. So, absolutely.
All right. Where are you located?
Guys, we are 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. That is one block east of Colorado Boulevard. That is in the Glendale Shopping Center, guys. Come and check it out. You'll love it, everybody, the way.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
All right, the Bell and Pollack Legal Show. You can call us right now at 303-713-8255. We're ready to take your questions, answer your questions, solve your problems. 303-713-8255. You're not going to find another show like this one, and you're not going to find another show like our Champions of the People Injury Show every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock on KOA. Okay, I want to go back to this Riley case just a little bit. you know, the Riley case, the Riley sued their neighbors for having a marijuana facility next to their 100-acre ranch land in Rye, Colorado, southern Colorado, Pueblo County. And so the court ruled that they had a cause of action. That's significant. You can have a private lawsuit cause of action against somebody violating a federal statute, and marijuana violates a federal statute, so the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals said it held. And so then everybody kind of claims victory. They went to trial, but this is a fascinating trial because the trial, sometimes you're not in court because they say the statute doesn't apply, but in this case they said the statute did apply. So they go to trial, and so the defense puts on evidence that actually the value of their land increased, not decreased, because that's what the Rileys were trying to prove, a decrease. So the defense put on evidence that the value of the land increased. And when I read this, I just couldn't believe it. The defense put on an expert witness who took multiple readings using a nasal ranger smelling device. I'm sorry, I don't even know what a nasal ranger smelling device was till I read this. But this smelling device, this nasal ranger, fascinating, had readings that were very, very low, so it would not be obnoxious, it would not be offensive. And so the Rileys lost the case, not on the fact they couldn't bring it under the RICO statute, which they could, but they lost the case on the fact that it really didn't devalue their property or their business.
Well, the Rileys had argued, and they presented evidence, that the cultivation next door had overrun their property with strong odors and loud noises, that it also contributed to increased traffic on the nearby roads necessary to access the property. The Rileys, of course, were using their ranch quite often. They were using it for things like horseback riding and to for people coming on there for purposes such as agricultural purposes. So they were saying the noises and the odors that were emanating from the next-door neighbors and coming onto their land was causing them an adverse impact to be able to use their land. And to be able to make money by having people come on their land and horseback ride and things like that. Now, you got to remember the RICO statute, you normally can also provide for three times the amount of damages to be awarded and for the attorney's fees that cost the litigation to be awarded. So the RICO statute is a very strong statute. It's out there to help people with respect to racketeering activity. It's not a criminal act. It's not something that's done by the state. It's a private cause of action that allows a person, when they believe that there is some kind of racketeering or corrupt activity going on, they can address it. The thing is the Court of Appeals has pretty much left it into a situation where anywhere where there's any kind of marijuana operations, it's racketeering.
Right, and the interesting part of the decision, another fascinating part, is this can apply to anybody up and down the supply chain. Right? So we're talking about the private cause of action part of the RICO Act. There's also the prosecutorial part of it. But let's put this in perspective. This RICO Act has been applied against the Hells Angels Motorcycle Club, the Latin Kings in Florida, the Catholic sex abuse cases was tried, Gil Dozier, the Key West Florida Police Department was charged by actually being a handler for importation of cocaine. It's been applied in a variety of situations. I don't know if anybody remembers Michael Milliken, but he was years ago. He was charged with a lot of these counts, and he had some connection with the Wynn and Encore hotels and in Las Vegas. Very fascinating history. So it's alive and well. Lawsuits have been brought in Oregon, California, and Massachusetts. So here we go. As long as it's a federal crime, the statute applies. Right now, joining us live is Jim from Colorado Springs. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, fellas. I live in a homeowners association in Colorado Springs that was hit by fire several years ago, and the people were allowed to rebuild pretty much at random and in violation of all of the rules for the covenants. Well, now they've rewritten the covenants and want to get approval from the people, and they won't approve the new covenants because they've given the board of directors more power than they need and should have. And so the board has taken this to court, and they're trying to get the courts to approve the covenants over the people. And I'm not sure that's how it's going to turn out in the courts, but I was just a question about it, since it's sort of a weird situation, I think.
All right, so we got feedback on your radio, so you'll have to turn that down, Jim. But basically, you just told us that the HOA was trying to enforce some new covenants, and now they've gone to court to have them court imposed upon the people.
No, rewrite them.
Rewrite them.
They did rewrite them, and nobody would approve them.
So they don't have approved covenants.
They don't have approved covenants, Jim.
That's correct.
And so this building was going on in violation of the covenants that the board at that time did not enforce?
That's correct. After the fire, 90% of the park was demolished by the fire. And so now people did rebuild, oversized, and different. Almost all of the regulations were ignored. You know what? How they used to tell you what kind of garage door looked like, the front door, what it looked like. People, you know, windows had to have the dividers in the windows to look like the old style windows. People put in plain glass windows. They did everything in violation of the covenants, and the association just sort of ignored it until they decided to. The covenants were outdated, so we need to rewrite them. And so they've rewritten them, and they sent them out. And, of course, most of the people wouldn't approve it, and or didn't approve it, I should say. And so they decided to take it to court, and so that's what they're doing right now. And I don't know what's the best approach on they're just getting too much power for the association in ignorance of the owners of the property here.
Okay, well, let's take a step back here, Jim, just a second. Let's take a step back. Because usually when you buy a piece of property, like condominium, townhouse, and usually when there's an HOA, you know, what gives them the authority? And as we always say at Lawyer Talk coming up, we need to look at the enabling document or documents. If you've ever bought a piece of property and you look at the title commitment, you'll see recorded against the property are the covenants. And the covenants in accordance with this page and this line and this number, right? And so those are covenants that run with the land. They're recorded, gives constructive notice to everybody that when they're buying this piece of property that the covenants are binding. So now we have at the very beginning the genesis, right? We have the genesis. We have the covenants written, recorded, and run with the land. And so when you buy the property, then you comply with the covenants. Now, one step further to you, they want to impose new covenants, and we're going to get to that right after the break.
Don't get off.
Don't get off. Can you hang with us, Jim?
Sure, certainly.
All right, please turn your radio down. We'll get you some answers here. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. The show that follows ours is the Consumer Real Estate Show. Barry and Larry, they're very knowledgeable. You know that. They talk about interesting subjects each week. They're experts in their field, Barry and Larry, and you can listen to them right following our show. Bell and Pollock, Champions of the People. We'll be right back. Fasten your seatbelt. Welcome back to Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are here for you. 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. Before the break, we were talking to Jim about an HOA question. They had some covenants. The board would never enforce the covenants. Now they want to change them, and they went to court to force the changed and new, rewritten covenants upon the homeowners. Brad, what do you think?
I'm kind of confounded by this whole thing. What you're telling me is you have a board that of people who did not enforce the covenants for a long time as things were being rebuilt, and could have adversely affected, and may very well have adversely affected, the values of your property. And then what happens is that rather than going back in and saying, wait a minute, we've got to get this all taken care of, which they might lose. Because obviously if they let it happen and they didn't enforce it, they could very well be looking at a situation where the homeowner who they're saying now has to change their front door or has to change their property in some way, that the board waived the right to enforce that part of the covenants. Instead of them going back in, though, and trying to put the covenants in place and in trying to enforce the covenants, they've just said, well, we'll just change the covenants to allow what it is that wasn't allowed to begin with, so we take the easy route.
Right, but Jim, I got a question for you. You said they went to court, so where are we, where are you, where are they in this process of court? I mean, they filed, is there a hearing, is a trial set? What are we doing?
Well, I'm not in it directly. I just, one of the homeowners here in the park has taken it to court, and he sent a letter out to everybody in the association, including the board members, to that this is going to happen. And it somewhere about the 21st, I think, of this month, it's supposed to go back before the judge and get some kind of a ruling on it. So that's where it is. And also, you're sort of right, in the new covenants, it gives them the authority to go to backtrack and say, we don't like this about your house, you have to change it, which is totally incorrect or improper, because they've allowed it. Now they want to make you pay to have it redone. And, of course, if they take you to court, they sue you, they use your monies against you to take the thing to court. And so you're losing twice.
Man, what a mess they've got. And you know, so much of this is governed by what we call the governing documents. And that's your CCRs, your covenants and restrictions. And you've got to be able to know what those say and get those. Now, you know, there's so much that can be opened up and the can of worms that comes up. The question is, I guess, to begin with, did the covenants and restrictions, did the bylaws, did they have any provisions in them to stop what was happening when the rebuilding was happening? Were they totally without ability to do anything? But if they were, the question is, why weren't their lawyers, the board's lawyers? Because every board has a set of lawyers, and it's usually some usual suspects that you can determine who would be the lawyers that would be representing them because they represent HOAs on a regular basis. But why didn't those lawyers or somebody go in right away and say, look, we've got to amend these bylaws, or we've got to amend these covenants to address this issue, so that we can determine what it is? And we got to get an architectural committee together. The architectural committee has to then put together its standards and its requirements and guidelines as to what you can and can't do. So all of this is, first of all, what do the initial governing documents say? Were they strong enough? Did they have any meat in them to be able to maintain the uniformity and the conformity that's required in an HOA? And if they were, did the board just look the other way? And why would the board look the other way? What is a reason that a board looks the other way? I mean, you get voted on, it's a position you asked for, you want to be on. And if you decide to look the other way, what are you doing? What's the reason for that?
I want to look at this from a different perspective here for a second, Jim. Let's look at it from this perspective. As I said right before we went off and took the break, okay? So the developer records the original covenants. They are mandatory. They do, in legal words, they do run with the land. Their covenants running with the land. They are enforceable. They are mandatory. And everybody's given constructive notice of it. So they are enforceable. They're mandatory. So now, the perspective I want to look at is now we fast forward to right now. Now somebody wants to change them and make them retroactive. So legal question, can you make covenants retroactive at a later date to go back and make people make changes to the property when they bought it, say, maybe 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago, right? So the next question is, or the next issue is, well, yes, you can do that if you can prove a couple of things that it's been illegal all along. Like some of these covenants in the early days had racial discrimination built in, so that can be held violative and retroactive. But just to change properties, we don't like your doors, we don't like your windows, I don't think violates any statute. And so there's a whole different legal argument whether or not they have the legal power and authority to retroactively impose new covenants and conditions and say, well, you should have done this 20 years, so now you got to do it.
But an HOA can can very well be denied the right to enforce certain provisions if they've sat back and allowed uniform violation of the of that particular provision.
Absolutely.
But then you got to get your HOA people out of there, and then the question is, or your directors out of there, then the question is, did it damage the value? Because, you know, Jim's got a great statement when he says some of these people built in reliance on believing that it was okay to have it this way. And now, that you know, if you don't change the bylaws in the covenants, you're going to be faced with these people being told they got to change their stuff, or they are grandfathered in for their unique situation that when it changes in the future, they're going to have to get back in compliance. And Jim, that's where the attorney for the homeowner who has brought this case needs to be focused, and also needs to be focused on the diminution in value that it's made to a person's property. Regardless of what side you fall down on, I think that both sides have some arguments, but, you know, more than likely, it seems to me like you're going to be looking at saying, look, if the community says we don't agree to amendment of the bylaws, and there's going to be, or the covenants, there's specific provisions on how you do that. And if they can't get that done, then it appears to me it's going to be a case by case basis of each violation as to whether that a violation is allowed to be grandfathered in until such time as there's going to be another renovation. My front door is the color it is, and it's got to be that way until I renovate it.
Well, yeah, and so you go back to the enabling thing, the covenants that were recorded, you have to follow the procedures are mandatory. Well, you might like them sometimes, you might not like them sometimes, but you got to follow those procedures. And so to have a retroactive act change where it devalues your property or costs you money, I just say, Here come the lawyers. So,
get Jim's name and
number. Jim, we got to go. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll get your information and we'll talk more, okay?
Sure.
All right. So, give Kevin your information. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. You know that. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. What's our website? ChampionsOfThePeople.com. What's on ChampionsOfThePeople.com? All of our books, all of our information, all of our videos, all of our shows, all of our podcasts. Why do we do this? Why? Think about that. For you, for information. Information is empowering. Rock and roll. See you next week. I shined upon her hand.